Hello, and welcome to My Cape York Life, real life stories of the people who live on and care for Cape York Peninsula.
This country's pretty special.
Awoodja Awoodja's nice, you've got to say it twice, where the rainforest meets the sea.
Like a lot of people, I just ended up in Cooktown.
We had no running water, we had a tin for a shower, you know, where you pull the chain.
I mean, we still have all the same things here we've always had, like those bees I showed you, they still persist around our paddocks and that, so there's still hope, hopefully.
I'm Lyndall Scoble from Cape York Natural Resource Management, and this is episode 2 of My Cape York Life. It is brought to you by Cape York Natural Resource Management with support from South Cape York Catchments and the Australian Government's National Landcare Program. You can find us on our Cape York Land Manager website, Facebook and Twitter, and please tell your friends about us. In episode 1, we met Shelley Lyon, who has spent 40 years on Cape York with her husband Barry. She's worked in and travelled the Cape's savanna country, wetlands, rainforest and red dirt, raising a family and caring for this remote, robust, yet fragile place. For the past 9 years, Shelley and Barry have been the rangers and caretakers at the Steve Irwin Wildlife Reserve on northwest Cape York. The Lyon family worked closely with Steve Irwin, and Shelley tells some hair-raising tales of going out looking for crocs with Steve and his family. I'm sitting with Shelley at one of my favourite Cape York places on the banks of the Wenlock River, talking about one of the big challenges of living remotely, educating the kids hundreds of kilometres from the nearest school, where busy mum and dad become the teachers too.
We all loved it, you know? Yeah, the kids loved it, I loved it.
You become the teacher.
Yes, and the kids were fantastic because you hear horror stories of, you know, mothers trying to teach kids. But, you know, when we went, I just said, look, this is something we have to do. We don't have any choice about this. I'm never, ever going to fight with you about this. This is just what we do. And then, you know, we get through this and then we go have fun with other stuff. And, yeah, we made it fun and we made it work. And, you know, it was never a drama.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we loved it. I loved not having the routine of getting up and getting off to school and making lunches. And you just had all this flexibility. Yeah.
And the kids would have had a pretty amazing natural education as well, with the environment and with yours and Barry's knowledge of the natural environment as well.
Absolutely, Lyndall. And we've always been so lucky in everywhere that we've lived that we've had a lot of visiting scientists in all sorts of fields. And, you know, they're always happy because the kids were always interested in what they were doing and so were we. And so we always got the opportunity to work with so many amazing people over the years, and we still do. We're very, very fortunate like that. And yeah, it was fantastic for the kids. Yeah. Really great education. Well, when we moved to Cooktown, Barry was the district ranger for Southern Cape York.
Yeah.
Yeah, I started working at the kindergarten for a year, and then to the preschool. Was still in the school game, but the kids all got to go to real school.
Did they enjoy it?
Yeah. They just made the most of what you know. They enjoyed it.
Yep.
And, no, it was nice sort of being in the school system as well, because we always had school holidays and then we were always able to travel with Barry wherever he was going off of them.
Yeah.
And, yes, and always, everywhere we've been, we've always done a lot of camping and just enjoy being in the bush.
So, but a bit of a different lifestyle going back to town again. And Barry in that role was travelling a fair bit still?
Barry's everywhere we've ever been, he's always been away a lot. So, kids and I have always been fairly independent.
I understand he went missing in action a few times.
Oh, yeah. No, there's been too many times he's not come home. But there's... And, you know, we're talking about days where there was no communication. You know, now that we've got satellite phones and things, you know, things are a bit easier. But when we first moved to Cooktown, it was the era of the big foxtail sagas. And he was, you know, in charge of Cape Melville National Park there, where they were poaching the seeds from the foxtail palms that only grow there. And so he was caught up with a lot of the law enforcement involved in that. And one particular time, a couple of the rangers who were on the ground were caught with some wet weather on the coast, and they couldn't get back to the base. And so Barry had to deal with how we're going to get these guys out. And they eventually got the Coast Guard boat and came up from Cooktown, and you know, it's a fair haul and yeah. pretty wild weather, and they eventually arrived in the middle of the night. They anchored up, you know, waiting for daylight to go and get the fellas who were camped over on the beach. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Barry's asleep on the back deck and felt his swag swishing around, and woke up and realised that the boat was sinking. Mm. Called out to the other two fellas. Pretty quickly, the boat went completely down, and he was in the water in the middle of the, well, early hours in the morning. Couldn't find the other two fellas. And eventually the front hatch popped up and these two fellas popped out like corks. And they held onto the bow for a short period of time, but were getting washed off and they were getting really tired. So they had to make a collective decision that they'd try and swim for the shore. And this is at an area where this Temple Creek, you know, they know there's big crocodiles in there. They work there often. And here they are swimming in the middle of the night for a very long swim to get to shore.
So eventually you get a call?
Yeah, a friend was a sergeant there, and I got a call saying that Barry's on a boat that sank. Great. And then
fantastic.
No news for quite some time. And then yeah, eventually we hear that they swam ashore and that they're actually okay. But, you know, they're long hours before you hear yeah. other sorts of
so,
things.
And, so how is that?
Well, Barry's a real bushy and I really don't worry about him too much. And I made the mistake of saying one time that someone could tell me the boat sank and he swam home and I wouldn't bat an eyelid. And then it was just after that happened. But
that's unreal.
Many times over the years he's not come home. I can't tell you how many. And I just don't panic. I don't worry about it. You know, there's usually a logical explanation and he turns up. And I guess I'm experienced at it. I just don't,
yeah.
you know. Another time when we were at Heathlands, I got a phone call from Cowan Police saying that Barry disappeared. He was out at the Skardon and someone reported that they hadn't come back to camp. And I thought, well, don't worry about it at this point. Wait till there's more information. And, you know, they wanted rego numbers of boats and cars and... You know, this and days go by, and then you hear, oh, well, yes, no, they actually did come back to camp, and it wasn't the right information, and, yeah, think things are okay. But, yeah, you do.
A few years of hearing those stories, and you just have to have faith that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and that there was some mechanical failure or, you know, the outboard, you know,
yeah.
had problems and they've got to the beach and walked somewhere. It yeah. just takes a long time to hear that things are okay, but...
And I guess for when you're getting these calls and your kids are around and they hear that too.
That's
so,
right.
So part of your role becomes
absolutely.
Making sure that they aren't worrying either.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's a really important coping mechanism as well. You say, look, you know, dad's bushy. He'll figure it out, whatever it is. And, yeah, so there's been a lot of those adventures over the years.
Mm. So that time in Cooktown, your whole life, Shelley, you've met lots and lots of interesting people. So during that time in Cooktown, you met quite a few as well.
Oh, absolutely. Cooktown's the home of interesting people. And, yeah, we had, you know, fabulous years there. And we lived out on the Endeavour River on a friend's property out there.
That's Jeanette, a pretty beautiful...
Jeanette Kovacevic. Yeah, it's a magnificent part of the country. And, you know, there's lots of big scrub pythons out there, which we love. And, you know, it's yeah. just a really interesting place. We had fabulous neighbours there, the Maxwells. And, you know, the kids were similar ages. They had a ball just hanging out in the bush. And, yeah, we had many, many, many happy years in Cooktown and eventually bought our own acreage and built our own house there, every little bit of it. And, yeah, lots and lots of fabulous adventures. There's such good country around Cooktown.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? There's a place where all of these different landscapes meet.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it was a great place to bring up, you know, kids, and especially an older son. You know, Joshua's always into his fishing and diving and, you know,
and
camping. And
Great Barrier Reef just
right off. There. Yeah. It's as close to the coast as anywhere. They get their boat licenses as soon as they can, and, you know, they're off on adventures. Yeah, it was we had many, many happy years there.
I think during that time you were staying in touch with the Irwins, and
yeah.
Steve was doing some work out at Lakefield?
Yeah, we always... Well, we forged a really strong friendship with Steve in those early days and always stayed in touch. And so it was after that that, you know, he met Terry and, you know, they started filming their documentaries. And, yeah, we'd often go with them and I'd cook for everybody, you know, and we'd help out and always, you know, stayed involved with the crocodile research when that kicked off. And one time... We'd just come back from Heathlands and Steve was working over at the 7 Mile, on one of the big holes on Lakefield, doing some croc stuff there. And he said, come over. And Hannah and I and our friend Jeanette went over and we arrived after work over there. So it was dark and we just pulled up in the car and Steve said, quick! Get in the boat. I just heard the trap go off. And so Terry was very pregnant with Robert at the time and little Bindi, and we all hopped in the boat and they were sitting down the back and Terry, of course, is trying to hold Bindi and the boat's a little bit dodgy, and we come up to this massive crocodile trap and it's full of crocodile, like the hugest crocodiles in this trap. And so Steve needs to tie the door up so that the crocodile doesn't work the door open before the team get there, you know, the next day to process this crocodile. Yeah. So I am up the front of the boat, holding the boat against the trap so that Steve can thread this rope through right down the door, both sides of this trap. And it was just unbelievable because I've got this hugest crocodile head that's right
face to face with the crocodile, literally.
Absolutely. So my face is only about a foot from this. I think it ended up being like 15 and a half foot crocodile. So I've got this massive head and he's a bit stressed, of course, because he's caught in this trap and he's surfacing. So the way I'm holding the boat and holding it against the trap, you know, I'm trying to keep him, you know, close enough to keep tying this door up so that I can't move. And this head is surfacing, you know, this close to my face and just blowing out his breath right in front of my face.
And it was the most,
it was incredible.
They make this incredible noise, don't they, too?
A growling. Yeah. He wasn't vocalizing so much, but it was just this
blowing
breath
in.
That was just, and this incredible size of this animal right in my face. It was just amazing.
Unreal. Unreal. Shelley, that's a story that not many people can tell.
I'm very lucky.
Incredible. So you did, I just want to quickly talk about, you did another stint back in Heathlands as well, didn't you?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
And you had another pretty, well, you were there alone with Hannah, I think.
Yeah, Barry was off and away doing other stuff or camped here and there. And the older two kids by this stage were away at uni working. Yeah, Hannah was about 16, I think, at the time, 15 or 16, our youngest daughter. We were there by ourselves. And there's just no one within cooey of the ranger base there. You really are isolated. And in the middle of the night, you know, the generator's off. We're on generator power and it's just quiet. And it's about midnight and I hear this vehicle come in. And we had a big German Shepherd at the time. And he was just going off his nut. And I thought, oh, who's this? You know, I've got to get up and deal with. Anyway,
because that wasn't uncommon. Like people would come in when they run out of petrol.
And we had an office there, so people would come in, you know, visitors. But you know, the middle of the night's not quite what you're expecting. And well, some people would travel at night, sort of from Bamaga going down to Cairns. But anyway, the middle of the night, I got up, and the dog's just going bananas, and so I had to go out. And here's this car full of huge fellas. They've got the window down about an inch to talk to me because they're so scared of the dog, which was a good thing. And they said, you know, you got a compressor. And I said, yeah, what do you need a compressor for? Oh, we got flat tire. And I said, well, put your spare on. You got a spare? No, they got no spare. So when you're in a situation like that, you have to help people or that there's nowhere for them to go. And so I kept the dog right beside me, went over and put the generator on and put the lights on in the shed and, you know, sort of got the compressor out and kept the dog on a chain right beside me. You know, the hairs on the back of my neck were standing up and one of the fellas says to me, "Where's your husband?" And I said, "Oh, he's over near the house." And then he said, "Aren't you scared out here by yourself?" And I thought, "Where's this going? This was not going well." And I said, "I've got this big hairy mate who'll rip the throat out of anyone that touches me, you know." And they were really scared of the dog. And one of the best things I ever taught that dog was, on command, when I said "watch," he would bark and he would arc up. And so whenever he relaxed, I would go "watch," and he would just "argh," and I wasn't letting him go. And then they wanted to take this compressor with them, and I said, "You can't, it's the only one I've got." And yeah, the whole thing was not panning out well. And just before I'd gone out to the car, I'd said to Hannah, our daughter, "Do not come out of the house. Whatever you do, do not come out of the house." So she'd stayed in there. I didn't, you know, want them to see her.
She must have been quite terrified in there, actually.
Yeah. I sort of never really talked to her about it, but I must. But the whole time it wasn't good. But I was just incredibly fortunate that I had the dog for a start, and that they were really scared of the dog, and they eventually left. But
did they take a compressor?
No, they did not take the compressor. And I stayed really assertive. You know, I was not being intimidated, and, you know, it wasn't a good situation.
And you just learn those skills, I guess.
You have to. I think you have to. And
maybe Hannah wasn't even concerned because she just knew you could handle it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But it
certainly tells you that it shows the value of a good dog
Absolutely. And when Barry came home from that particular trip, I said, "This dog needs to be on the payroll." I reckon he just saved my life.
Yeah, totally.
This is My Cape York Life. Find us on Cape York NRM's website at Land Manager Podcasts. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, so please tell your friends. We're yarning with Shelley Lyon at the Steve Irwin Wildlife Reserve on northwest Cape York Peninsula. It's a wetland conservation property named in memory of Steve after his untimely death in September 2006. The property was acquired as part of the National Reserve System and is home to the world's most comprehensive crocodile research program. Shelley and her husband Barry had many adventures with the Irwins over the years.
Every August, for I don't know how many years, we always used to go with Steve and the scientists, and, you know, started doing this crocodile research. And we'd just finished a trip to Lakefield, so I would cook for everyone. You know, we'd hang out, we'd catch lots of crocodiles, do the science. It was fabulous, fabulous time. And Barry and I just headed off on our long service leave, and we were heading over to the Kimberley. And we were at Borroloola, and we'd been out to King Ash Bay, and, you know, no phone reception, nothing, and we'd just sort of come back into Borroloola, and I just turned the phone on, and there was just messages, and I'm going, "Oh my God, something terrible has happened." And you instantly think of the kids, you know, what's going on? This was about 2 or 3 days after Steve had had his accident. So we were like totally oblivious to what had happened, and the phone just wouldn't stop. And I'm like trying to scroll. One message that I finally opened said, "You know, I'm so sorry for your loss." And I'm like, "What's going on?" You know, I just thought something terrible had happened to one of the kids. And I eventually, there was a lot of phone calls from Sarah, our daughter. And so I rang her just to try and find out what was going on. And she told us about Steve, and of course couldn't believe it. And anyway, we eventually had to make our way to Darwin so that we could fly down, you know, to be with the family. And of course, that was a terrible time. Yeah, we were there for, you know, as long as we could be, and it was the end of our long service. And I'd been helping out with, you know, Terry and the kids especially. And Terry asked me, you know, would I stay, help? You know, it was a pretty daunting thought being a single parent and staying to help out with the kids. And so I moved down there. Helped out for a lot of years and, yeah, got to do some amazing things and travelling and, you know, Binny and Robert were like my own kids, you know, love them. And my kids were older by that stage, so it was something that I was able to do and very so privileged to have been able to. You know, Robert was only two at the time. Yeah. So, yeah, I was his nanny for years and then, yeah, he started school and used to teach him and, yeah.
So, and you're in a good place for that because when you're in Cooktown, you've done how many years of...
Yeah, an early education. Yeah, so probably 13 years. But, yeah, so, no, it was great and, you know, they're great kids and just beautiful people and great friends and it was a real honour to be able to help out.
And you did a fair bit of travelling?
Yeah, got to do some fantastic travelling and, you know, first overseas trips and first snow and, yeah, all sorts of amazing adventures and, yeah, I was very, very lucky.
Yeah. So before the accident, you had been doing quite a bit of work with Steve. You'd been on his boat.
Yeah, I had. Yeah, Steve had a fantastic research vessel built and, asked me would I cook on it and crew. And so, yeah, we had some fantastic adventures working on the boat for like the year before that. And, we went all the way from Mooloolaba, you know, a lot of the reefs all right around Torres Strait, right round into the Gulf here and down the coast. And, yeah, we had fantastic adventures and did lots of diving. And
just... are there any particular things that stick out in your memory? I mean, but there must be some things which, you know, you go, oh, my God, that was just... The reef at Blah Blah was just so beautiful.
Oh, yeah, so many places. But
wildlife.
Yeah, yeah. I did a lot of scuba diving, which I'd only sort of learnt to do just prior to working on the boat. And, yeah, so just everywhere we went was amazing. We were at the Swains Reefs one time. I remember Steve flying in a float plane for the week. You know, he was in between filming and he had a really short time and he said, Shell, while I'm here, I want to eat fish every meal. And our son Josh was working on the boat at the time too. He was an amazing fisherman. And he said to Steve, well, tell me what species you want. And so Steve would say, oh, I want a dog-tooth tuna for breakfast or something. And so Josh would go and catch it and then I would cook it up and we'd have fish, you know, cooked in different ways the whole time. Yeah, it was just fun. It was, you know, great fun and we all had a ball. But no, there's lots of amazing stories and we got to see so many amazing things on them because a boat gives you access to areas where you wouldn't normally go. And
because it's a research vessel.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Steve loved his sharks as well, you know, so we did some amazing shark dives and also sea snakes. There's a place on the Swains we dived called Snake Pit, you know, where there was just sea snakes all around and that was amazing.
So you're down on the water and you've got the most venomous snake.
Yeah, and they're curious, so they like often around your tank and
they're everywhere.
Yeah, incredible. It was just amazing. But yeah, we're very, very lucky and I just I love boats, so it was just a great experience.
And here we are now at Steve Irwin Wildlife Reserve. So how did you end up here and what's life like here at the reserve? What do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Okay, well, after Steve's accident, the government wanted to, you know, have some sort of recognition of Steve's contribution to conservation, you know, in the country, which was huge. You know, instead of a statue or something, you know, everyone decided that a living memorial was a better option. So, there was a huge, huge process involved in acquiring a property. Just before Steve passed, he had actively been looking for a conservation property on Cape York. I'd had personal conversations with him about it. Cape York's very difficult because of the tenure of the land. You can't just go out and buy property. It's not that simple. So we started looking for something on Cape York and, you know, something with crocodiles, hopefully, and then through the National Reserve System, which is a federal government system, way of acquiring conservation land. This place came on board and Terry said to Barry, you know, will you come and manage it? So he resigned from National Parks and came on board to manage this place. So, yeah, it's...
And that's been about 9 years now.
Yeah, yes, yeah. It has. It's amazing. And it's absolutely beautiful property and a very fitting tribute to Steve. And, you know, he loved this place. We'd done crocodile research downriver. He loved Cape York. Everything that's here and everything that we've found here is just amazing. And he would have just loved to have been able to have this place.
Yeah. And again, it's a place where the diversity of species is pretty wild, actually. There's so many different places and vegetation types and birds and reptiles and just everything's here, really.
It is incredible. And it's like, I often describe it as a little present, and it just keeps unwrapping more amazing things, you know, over 9 years. And, you know, we still haven't found everything and we still haven't seen anything and we're still finding new species of things. And it's just, yeah, an amazing, amazing property.
What are some of the things that are here that are unique to this area?
There's a lot of things. The Wenlock River has the richest freshwater fish diversity of anywhere in Australia. The critically endangered speartooth shark lives in the river. There is some of these bauxite springs that we bauxite oases that we've found here, you know, have unique vegetation, not found anywhere else. And stands of things that are, you know, here, nowhere else. Yeah, just so many things. I'm not sure where to start all the unique things. But,
it's... We woke up this morning to the palm cockatoos off in the background.
Yes.
So you've got palm cockatoos who are nesting here and...
And really good populations of them.
Yeah.
And this, you know, the riverine rainforest along the Wenlock is a critical corridor, you know, between the east and the west coast of Cape York, with cuscus and all sorts of amazing, amazing wildlife.
And every August, the team from Australia Zoo come up and do crocodile research here.
Yep. So when we acquired the property here, we shifted our crocodile research to here. Prior to that, you know, it was Lakefield or wherever else we were working. And so for the last 9 years here, we've been studying the crocodiles with acoustic technology and also satellite tracking. So we have 150 crocodiles that we caught now that have acoustic trackers in them. And then we have an array of receivers all, you know, up and down the river into Port Musgrave and also in the Ducie, so that when an animal swims past, it's recorded and we can track what they're doing. It also records body temperature, and the satellite trackers also record diving times and depths, and also wherever they go if they leave the system. So we've had some incredible findings, and you know, it's an absolute credit to Terry and the kids that work so hard, because this is an expensive exercise to manage and run this place, and also to keep that crocodile research happening. It's a, you know, huge logistical exercise, and you know, all credit to them. To, you know, they've never wavered in their commitment to, you know, keeping Steve's legacy alive and keeping everything going here.
My Cape York Life. Great stories from all around Cape York Peninsula.
So, Shelley, you're a bit of a beachcomber. You've talked about beachcombing at Captain Billy's. You've also done a bit of beachcombing on the western coast as well. And during one of those times, you found a pretty amazing discovery.
Yeah, I do love my beachcombing, and I'm very fortunate to be able to go to a lot of isolated sort of places that people can't get to. And, a few years ago, it was about 2013, I think, Barry and I had gone over to the west coast to Pennefather Beach, because we love going over to see the turtles nesting and hatching, and we'd just gone over for a weekend off. And you can drive down the beach for about 40 kilometres down to a spot called Dyfken Point, which is where the Dutch actually landed in the 1600s.
And we were coming around a bit of a headland and, you know, looking for just interesting things. And I noticed up in an eroding bank what looked like a skull. And I said to Barry, that looks like a skull. It's probably a baler shell, but, you know, we'll go and have a look. And had to stand up on the bonnet of the car to actually get high enough to see what it was. And sure looked like a skull as we got closer. And anyway, we ascertained that it was. And went, wow, that's pretty amazing. And so we took some photos and GPS fix and, you know, went and told the detective, or detectives when we got to town. And just said that I'd be interested to know what it was, because it's in an interesting place. It could have been Dutch, it could have been Aboriginal, it could have been, you know, someone gone missing from Weeper over the years, because it was sort of exposed to the sou'easter from that area as well.
So Dyfken's Point is sort of just, it's north of Weeper, but to get to it you have to go along quite a long way.
Yeah, you have to cross the Mission River, so yeah, there's a long way around to get there. So anyway, in due course, we heard that it was Aboriginal and that it was old, and sort of didn't hear any more about it. We heard that the area had been closed off. A year or so later, we contacted a friend of ours who's a forensic anthropologist at the museum in Brisbane, and I just said, you know, emailed him and said, were you involved in the excavation, you know, that I'd actually found it? And yeah, he sent me some more information, which was amazing. And then we'd talked to some of the traditional owners who'd told us a little bit more, and then we eventually found out that it was 3,500 years old, and the oldest remains, you know, found in, you know, in the cyclone belt. Things don't survive the humidity and the conditions up here. So it was a really significant find, and they found most of the skeleton, and it was a woman in her early 30s. The traditional owners were very keen to find out as much as they could, and so they allowed them to take some DNA samples and stuff from the teeth, which has been sent to a laboratory in Copenhagen where they're doing the DNA work, and hopefully some staple isotope stuff to find out what she might have been eating. And they've also done taken some DNA from the, you know, local people as well to see if there's a connection. And yeah, really significant.
Fascinating, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Amazing, a real window into the past of Cape York.
Oh, incredible. And yeah, I feel very honoured to have, you know, discovered it. And it was very, very important to find it when we did, because a cyclone came in straight after and it was already eroding away. She would have been completely lost and washed into the ocean.
That's
so
amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you, Shelley.
I'm very lucky.
Thank you for giving Cape York people that little bit of a window into the past.
Oh, it's a great honour, and yeah, very, very privileged to have been able to contribute in that way.
Yeah, wonderful story. And Shelley, would you describe for us the house that you live in, that you've lived in for the last 9 years here at Steve Irwin Wildlife Reserve? I had the pleasure of staying in your house a couple of weeks ago, and I love it, and I absolutely love it, but it's not something that everyone would be able to do, I don't think.
No, we still live in tents, so we have a shed. We have the research base is a big shed that's got a kitchen area and communal sort of eating area, and you know, some ablutions. But yes, we sleep in our tents.
you've got a tent overlooking this gorgeous river, which for me, I guess, is pretty special. But it really is. It's not something that everyone would be able to do and
for sure.
Live without, you know, where you are. You've got no power.
No.
No phone reception.
Nope.
It's quite unique, really.
Yeah.
Pretty special.
Incredibly remote. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's been a great ride.
So, reflecting on that ride, you've been up here on Cape York, this amazing part of the country, for 40 odd years. You look like you've only been up here, you know, for 20, because you look so youthful. And
of course.
It's
of
this
course.
Life on Cape York. but it has been. So you've seen a lot. What are your reflections on life up here over this time? What have you seen, the changes? And
some of the most amazing changes are technology.
you know, and that's in communications, it's in the science that, you know, we're doing with the crocodiles. There's, you know, we used to sit around with Steve around the campfire and go, you know, what are these crocs eating? What are they doing? What are they, you know, what, how do they interact? All, you know, we'd always have a million questions, and it's amazing, you know, to have been involved in crocodile research basically since 1976, so 40 years of crocodile research, and just see how, you know, with technology, we're now being able to answer some of those questions. And, you know, right down to, you know, we're taking samples now to with stable isotopes to see what they're eating. So we're finally getting there and starting to answer these questions. But technology is probably one of the most amazing advances. Well, I guess it's advances that I see on Cape York, and even, you know, social media, keeping people connected. You know, when we first came up here and we had the party line phone, it was just, that's what there was. And, you know, there was the galah session on the radio of an evening where you could talk to some other woman, or, you know, it was just, yeah, things like that have changed so much.
So how has social media impacted your life?
I can get news, you know, I, you know, stay connected with kids and, you know, family that are so far away, and just getting the message out to people on what we do here and the importance of, you know, the Steve Irwin Wildlife Reserve. There's so many aspects of it. I've, you know, it's my entertainment. We don't have TV or anything like that, or radio. So, you know, all that is just amazing.
What do you see for the future of Cape York? So you've been involved in land management here for that time, for that whole time. Probably longer, actually, because Barry was coming up here even when you met him.
Yeah.
What are your hopes and aspirations for land management, land and sea management at Cape York into the future?
I've seen a lot of failures, with especially with agricultural sort of things. You know, Cape York is nutrient deficient. You know, the cattle industry is marginal. There's no properties on Cape York with massive homesteads, and, you know, they're not millionaires. It's a marginal industry, and it's a good industry to have on Cape York. Agriculture, apart from Lakeland, you know, that's, you know, seen its failures, but there's some successes there as well. I think the greatest attraction on Cape York is its remoteness and its untouchedness. So, you know, and that's why we've had how many thousand people come up here in four-wheel drives?
32,000?
It was a huge amount of vehicles who've come up this year. And, you know, people want to see wilderness. And I think that we need to acknowledge that and have some parts of Australia that, you know, are not touched, and you know, some that are restricted access, and some places that will be preserved. It's a tricky one with, you know, economics are important. People need to make a living, people need to survive, and, you know, there's no easy solutions, but I think, you know, with good communication, there's you know, I think we need to get smarter with mining. We all need mining, but we need to recycle stuff. It's not a limitless resource. So, yeah, I see the future of maybe having to limit numbers. You know, sheer numbers of people will wreck places, and they do. We need to educate people more. Yeah, I'm just hope that things survive in their when we're sitting here on a pristine river. I have concerns when, you know, people want to mine upstream, they want to dam upstream, they want to, you know, do all different activities which affect things enormously, and you know, the cost of sacrificing some areas needs to be seriously looked at before it goes ahead, which it isn't a lot of the time. But, yeah, we need to get smarter at the way we use things.
There's a bit of a tradition with the Wenlock River when There's a bit of a saying that you've certainly said to me that, you know, you need to bathe in the waters of it, and it means that you'll always come back. Is that true, do you think?
I think so. Cape York's a bit like that. It gets in your blood. And I've got to clarify here that I'm not condoning swimming anywhere where there's crocodiles in the Wenlock.
bathing can mean just
baptizing yourself in the Wenlock. That's it. That's it. I don't want people to think it's okay to swim where there's the biggest crocodile population in Queensland. But yes, it certainly gets in your blood, and I know I'll always keep coming back.
Thank you, Shelley Lyon. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you. I think this might end up being a two-part series. Shelley is, you know, someone who has been on the Cape for a long time, and she's seen a lot, and she's certainly one of our living treasures that we have here. So it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. Thanks, Shelley.
It's a pleasure, Lyndall. Thank you.
Shelley Lyon, a gifted storyteller, sharing some of her adventures over 40 years of living on and caring for Cape York Peninsula in episode 2 of My Cape York Life. And if you haven't heard the first part of Shelley's story, download or stream episode 1 of My Cape York Life from Cape York NRM's Land Manager website and look for podcasts. Next time on My Cape York Life.
Port Stewart is actually at the northern end of the Princess Charlotte Bay. We have about 15 to 20 people living down here.
The Lom Loma traditional land stretches from Massey River up in the north and continues to the northern end of the Normanby River.
Our goal is to be able to support ourselves and being able to get a lot more of our traditionals and that back on country working.
Just being outdoor and being connected to the country, it's always been home for me, and I'm glad to be working here.
How do young people on the Cape make a living? We meet Michaela and Wilfred, two of Cape York's future leaders, at the Lum Lumma Ranger Base at Port Stewart, Princess Charlotte Bay. My Cape York Life is brought to you by Cape York Natural Resource Management with support from South Cape York Catchments and the Australian Government's National Land Care Program. I'm Lyndall Scoble, and I'll see you next time on My Cape York Life.